Welcome to the Debt Financial Reset Extreme Execution Podcast, aka Debt Free Podcast, where we help young debt-free seeking individuals achieve debt freedom through strategies and tips and interview young successful debt-free minorities. I'm your debt-free host, Michael Benjamin. So y'all, hope y'all feeling blessed. Hope y'all feeling amazing. I hope y'all are feeling great. Welcome to a new episode of the Debt Free Podcast, aka Debt Financial Reset Extreme Execution, where we help you pay off your student loans quickly. Today's episode is very, very special. I got my homie. I got a special guest, Miss Tanika Mangum. Miss Tanika Mangum, she's the CEO of Paid for College, and is affectionately known as a scholarship advocate and truly believes in the power of scholarships. As a first-generation college graduate, she earned a bachelor's degree from Eastern Connecticut State University, a master's degree in higher education from Florida International University, and an executive leadership for change degree from the Carroll School of Management at Boston College. That's a lot of degrees. She is student loan debt-free and did it all with the help of scholarships. I didn't. She has over 12 years of experience and has worked with the national scholarship organizations like the United Negro College Fund and served on multiple scholarship selection committees. She has been regionally and nationally recognized for top leadership qualities and impactful advancement initiatives to move students and families to action with a can-do attitude. Welcome to the podcast, Tanika. How you living?
Hey, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to start and share. Let's go.
Yeah, man, got to share the gem. So I actually know Tanika personally, so, you know,
yeah,
that's just a sidebar. For the listeners, we met on a Clubhouse.
Yes,
and you know, we
feel real light and just real, right?
So we
keep it 100 in this whole conversation. So I hope your listeners definitely tune in.
Facts. All right. So first off, let's just get straight to it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I cannot complain. And how can I complain when you're debt? You have no complaints when you're debt free. So yes, it's been good. The weather's warming up. So I'm just all in all just excited and hopeful and yeah, just blessed.
That's good. That's amazing. Any small wins, big wins during the week? Could be financial, not financial. Just curious.
Oh man. So one thing about me that's also interesting is I just completed the WSET 2 wine exam. So if people don't know what that is, it's kind of like your wine certification. So if you saw the movie Uncorked, then you know what I'm talking about. It's pretty much a wine exam to test your knowledge about wine in regions, the taste, the everything. And so I just finished taking that. So it did pretty well. So I'm excited about that. And then I'm starting to record my online course. So there's a lot of things moving and shaking, but overall, those are all the wins this week and looking forward to some more for the rest of the month.
Awesome. Awesome. Amazing. Congratulations. Does the course have to do with finances? You want to go ahead and plug that in or?
Yeah, actually it does. So it's, I've been asked for many of years to put an online course together. Basically, it's an online course that even I wish that I had going into college about being debt-free. So how do I pay for college without accruing all of this debt? And so it's literally called Less Debt Course. That's literally what it's called. It's going to be called Less Debt Course. And it's a full 8 modules. It's going to be everything from your worksheets, your templates. It's a full on like step-by-step on how to look and to get your degree for less. So I'm very excited to put it together. I know all my supporters are very excited so I can get it out to more people so they don't have to book, you know, one-on-one clients with me. But it plans to come out in March of 2021. So we're just excited to launch it and get it out so people can at least have the resources, especially right now, considering like the times and people just trying to figure out how to get a better education or an advanced education without incurring all of the crazy student loan debt.
That's a fact, man. Money is a really touchy subject. So make sure y'all check out Tanika's Less Debt course. I'm gonna have her information below. I'm sure she'll have it in her bio. And at the worst case, you could always DM her. She'll give you the information. So, thanks for sharing an early resource. So let's get a picture of who Tanika is. Who's Tanika? Where did you grow up? We read about your bio. Give the listeners a little bit of a story about you.
Yes. So I'm born and raised in Connecticut to two amazing parents, Southern raised based parents. But yes, I grew up in Bristol, Connecticut. Of that, people don't know what that is. That's home of ESPN. So big sports fan, huge sports fan, especially in New England. So if you got New England haters, I'm sorry. but that's it is what it is, right? So yeah, grew up in Bristol. It's a very small town. It's very communal, but it does have a lot of its issues that I had to grow up pretty early understanding in terms of like racial. And so I went to schools where I was like one of the only Black kids around, had to really learn how to celebrate and understand Black history at a very, very early age, and definitely had the resources to do so. Both my parents did not attend college, and so college was a huge thing. It wasn't just a, oh, I want to be the first. It was like my dad set out the mission to move to Connecticut so that we could have opportunities, right? So similar to what you would find in stories of, from immigrant families that might come to the US to say they want a better education or better opportunity for their kids, the same thing, but he just moved from a different states to provide that. And so college is major, like we had to go, but it wasn't like you just had to go. It was like we want you to do well. So there was a push with that all through school to just do your best, do the best you can, always study, do all those things. But there was not a push for financial. And so what had happened was, as most students understand, like everybody just talks about applying to school, applying. And you apply, you wait, you do all these college tours, you go to campuses, you really like talk to people. They shove you in front of people who graduated from college and churches and just try to give you like a just a rundown like how college is and tell you like, oh, the stresses of college and all these things. But nobody really talks about the big major elephant in the room, which is paying for it. And I went on a Black college tour. I wanted to go to HBCU. That was my first choice. Picked out, the school of my choice and still one of the schools I really, really love, which is FAMU. And got accepted to FAMU. Everything was aligned, but my dad was like, no, you're not going because you don't have family there. And the thing about it is like I pretty much like had a full ride, right, to FAMU.
Oh,
So it was
dang.
kind of like, what do you mean? Like I didn't understand this conversation. But I think now looking back on it, it was really about a lot of things that we don't talk about. We just talk about like the tuition and the fees and stuff. And my dad was thinking of the ticket, like how much to fly there, how much to bring your stuff there. If there was an emergency, how could we get you back? Like all these costs that I was not considering. And I know students who are in college now with COVID, they now get it, right? Because like you had to when the school was shutting down out of nowhere, it was like you had to figure out your bus, plane, something. And some students got stuck on campus because they didn't have the money home. So a lot of that is information to just talk to people about when you're picking a school. It's far more than what the school just says how much it costs to go there. It's everything else that comes with it, especially if you're trying to go out of state. And so my dad's answer was like, no. And so I was like, well, where am I gonna go? Like, I really wanted to be an engineer. That was my thing. I wanted to be an engineer. Ended up touring all the state schools. Now, most of the state schools were very close to where I already lived, like in 30 to 30 minutes to an hour. And my dad was like, he was the type of person who would pop up, right? And I'm like, I don't want that experience. I want my own college experience. I want to get away. I want to explore, like all those things, right? So I actually picked Eastern Connecticut State University because it was the farthest from my house. Like literally, that's how I picked it. But then the second thing was, it was one of the only, it actually is still, was the only state school that had an African American president. Now, I just, my background where I wasn't, it wasn't likely to see, I never had a black teacher. I never had like all those things. And so, like, to see a president of a university, like who was African American, that was a big deal for me. And so, and we headed up, me and the president, the late president, he passed away a couple of years ago, unfortunately. But he was, he really took us under his arm, you know, really made sure like we had a good experience and all that. So anyway, get to college and, you know, family's trying to figure out how we're paying for things and everything is just tight. Now, again, my parents didn't have degrees, so they worked multiple jobs. Like, it was just, we did what we had to do. But loans was definitely in the picture. And one of the things that is so pivotal in my journey, people ask me all the time, like, how did you become debt free? How did you know what to do? And my story starts like this. I was in a class. I had just gotten a bill saying that I owed 5,000 in order to register for classes the next semester. And I'm like, how am I going to come up with 5 grand? Like, I just, you know, like what? You know, this notice isn't going to your parents. It's coming to you, right? And so I'm going to class, like after getting this news, just kind of frazzled, you know, just thinking about everything. And I'm sitting in this class, and there's two Caucasian boys behind me, and they're talking. And one of them says to the other, "Hey, we need to apply to that scholarship, so we need to put a down payment on the house." I'm going to repeat what I just said.
Please
They
do.
said, they said, "I need to apply to that scholarship because we need to put a down payment on the house." And I'm thinking to myself, what? I'm trying to figure out a balance just to register for classes. And they're talking about houses. Clearly, something I don't understand, right? So I turn around like, wait, what? And they're looking at me like, what? I'm like, can you explain what you just said? Like, and they're like, figure it out. Was not helpful, right? So I went to the student affairs office and was like, to my financial aid advisor, I said, listen, there's clearly something I don't know and I need to know it. Like, what can I do to help me pay for school? I was like, what's the scholarships thing? Like, in high school, they talk about scholarships, so they always give you like Gates Millennial Scholarship, Coca-Cola. They always give you these big scholarships that you just feel like you're gonna get anyway. And so you just feel like, what's the point? Or they don't give you no resources at all, which was the case for me. And you really kind of just focus on your parents finding about a scholarship because from a barbershop or a salon or something. Like, you don't really, or the church scholarship that they give every year, right? But it's not enough for no 5 grand, right? So she's telling me, yeah, you can use scholarships for a lot of things. And you can also get scholarships to pay for other things outside of just your tuition and your fees and things. And I'm like, what? No idea. And when she told me that, I tell you, I went full force ahead, like full strength away. I was like, bet, got it. I started really applying and like really applying, like finding stuff and like applying. And I didn't win. I'm gonna be real. Like, so this is a whole thing. Like, people think like, okay, she got the information, she applied, she won it, bam, good story. No. I was applying, getting like had $0, like getting all responses or not getting responses at all. And I'm thinking to myself, what is going on? I'm trying to figure out, like, I'm applying to the scholarships. What's the problem? Clearly, I'm a good student, blah, blah. The issue was my essay was trash. Trash. And I realized that there is a different art to writing for money. The school system has only taught us to write to just regurgitate information back, right? Like people,
Whoa,
or to like,
facts.
or tell somebody else's story, right? So we're telling a story from Christopher Columbus, whoever they tell us to write about, right? They've never taught us how to write about us. They never told us about how to market for us. And so when I had to sit back and I started researching winners of scholarships and I started reading their essays or emailing them and saying, "Can I read your essay?" And there was a trend that I was starting to see. And I'm like, "Oh, let me try this out." Switched my essay up instant. It was like, boom, 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 like easy coming in. And I'm like, wow. So I always tell people who say, like, I applied to scholarships and I didn't get anything. It's probably your essay. Most likely it's your essay.
Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. We're not gonna blow past that. So you were writing normally the way you were taught to, and then you figured out the format of how to be able to write, catering to scholarships, and then the scholarships just started coming in.
Yes, let's start.
We gotta break down what's all right. Let's get the cheat code right
Listen,
now.
there's so many things. Okay, so the first thing to note is that you have to be persuasive, right? And this is not just your general persuasive writing. It's not like persuasive writing class 101, right? But it is about your story. And a lot of people say, okay, yeah, they tell us all the time, write your story. But what does it actually mean? You have to think about it from the lens of the reader, right? So the reader is going to have some kind of emotion, right? So there's only three emotions that your reader should get from reading your essay. One, they should either feel inspired by you, like applause, clap, clap, clap. Two, they want to advocate for you, which means like, okay, we got to give this person a chance. They've, gone through all these things, or they've done all these things, and you definitely want to give them a shot and support them. Or three, they have a thought. You leave them with a thought or questions. And what I mean by that, thoughts or questions, is you made them think about something in a different way that they've never thought before, and it made them open their eyes about how they potentially could help more students or that they could solve an issue. Okay. So those are the three. If you're outside of any of those emotions, you're done. The other issue, the other tip I would say here is a lot of people say, oh, tell the student to write the essay and then have their teacher or somebody read it. The issue is we forget that humans want to be kind all the time, even if it's not helpful. So what happens is you get people say, can you read my essay? And then they're like, okay, well, it's not that great, but how do I tell them? I don't want them to feel bad or feel like they don't want to do it anymore. Like there's all these like feelings of I don't want them to feel bad, or how do I tell them that it's not that good? So I'll just give them a couple of pointers, right? I'll just like correct a couple of things and then say it's fine. But they know it didn't have no emotion to it. So what I always tell students is this, is lie, not lie, but say, hey, a friend of mine sent me this essay, and they think that their teacher said it was really good, or this is a something I should sample, right? Or something I should like base my essay around, or the style, and then tell them like, what do you think about it? Because then it's objective, right? Because then it's like, I don't know this person who wrote it. I can tell you it's trash. I can tell you like that didn't do anything for me, or you had all these questions, right? And if it's your essay, you're going to get that feedback, a real feedback, right? So it's important to have that, because if you don't, then you're going to be thinking that, everything's bad. So, I mean, I have clients be like, I thought I was a good writer, and then I got your feedback. And I'm like, no. Please don't make it personal. I'm trying to help you win the money, right? And I could be nice, but you won't win the money, right? And it's whenever we see corrections, we're always going to think like, oh no, I didn't do it right, right? But take the emotion out of it and say, this is helping me get closer to the dollars, right? So that's very, very important. But in terms of writing, you really want to make sure that you're clear about how you start an essay. There's only four ways to start an essay. If you start an essay in any of outside of these four, you're not winning. It's 100% guaranteed you're not winning.
Let's get it.
So the first way is you can start with a timeline. And that is you're putting the reader in a certain time, whether it be a day, whether it be an event, whether it be a season, classroom, whatever, you're putting the visual for the reader. Okay. So you can start the essay by saying, I remember like yesterday on February 27th, whatever, right? Or you could say, I was in Miss Johnson's class, English class, for the very first time, or I started a new school, blah, blah, blah. But you're putting the reader in the time frame. Okay. So that's one way. The second way that you can start is by a fact, right? So it's like these are your statistics. This is something you looked up. These are numbers. So you can say only 6% of the STEM field is African American. That's a fact, right? That's what you could literally write, right? And then you start to go move from there about is putting the reader to say, okay, they're going to talk about this either as a lens of a motivation or a problem or issue you don't know, but this is how you're starting the essay, right? And then thirdly, you can start with an opinion, right? And this is your thoughts, your feelings, how you approach things, or how you your morals or your values, right? So you can say, I believe COVID-19 was a blessing in disguise. Not everybody thinks that way, right? So it's your opinion, your thought, your emotion, right? So in the last and final way that you can start your essay is by a quote. So this is someone said something to you, could be a family member, grandparent, whatever. It could be a quote, it could be a poem, excuse me, or a lyric. It could be something that's gravitated to you that's going to set up the essay to say, this is what I'm going to talk about, or this is where like my inspiration is coming from. Okay. If you start anything, if you start an essay outside of that, you are not getting that essay. Okay. You're not getting that scholarship because many students start the scholarship. I call it the pageant answer, right? That pageant answer, we know what it is, where it's like, tell me what you want to major in and why. And then the response is, I want to major in blah, 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 because blah, blah, blah. And then you put a period, and then what? Guess what? It's 500 words. So what are you going to do? Right? Like you already answered the question. That's not the point. The point is to write it as a story. So I tell people, think about like your favorite movie. Come in automatically with the details of the beginning, right? They set up the time frame. Just the same four examples I just told you is probably the same four ways that your movie started.
It's a
Right?
fact.
So think about it in that form. Like I'm literally setting up this movie, my story for the reader. Then I'm giving more evidence, right? So that's the second, that's the third most important part, evidence. And say that you're a hard worker, but somebody else that knows you might be like, no, they're not. Right? Because you have to have evidence of that. You can't say you're something or you believe in something with no evidence. So it's always shocking to me when people say they want to major in something, then I say, oh, okay, what have you done in high school to provide evidence of that? And they can't tell me. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, and I'm not saying just in the school, but even outside of school. If you're interested in graphic design, maybe there wasn't a graphic design club or something that you could do in school, but were you learning Adobe Pro and Photoshop and all the stuff outside of school? That's evidence, right? So it's about like what evidence you have to say you want to study this or you want to pursue this, right? And that world of a difference because guess what? People get essays all the time and they just say, oh, I want to be a doctor, and then they start writing about how they don't like blood and all. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Or like, I want to be an engineer or I want to be in STEM because I want to make money. What? Like, that's not going to get you the scholarship, right? So you have to really get down deep into it. If you want to be an entrepreneur, who inspired you to be an entrepreneur? Who do you know owned a business? Right? What examples do you have? What evidence do you have? So those are the things that I kind of help my clients in crafting their story. That's what I mean.
And I found all these trends, not just from my personal experience, but when I worked for scholarship organizations, when I got to read and help students win full scholarships and partial scholarships, this was all the winners had the same trend. But it's just not written in a book. That's going to be my cue. I'm going to be writing it in a book to give these things. This is why I'm doing an online course, because it's literally,
ASAP.
there is a whole there's a whole strategy to it.
Definitely. Yeah, I didn't even know that. And I mean, I wish I knew about all of this before I even came into college, because when I was in college, I wasn't even thinking about scholarships. Kind of like what you were saying earlier. Like, you're exposed to it lightly, but they don't really go too deep into it. So I was just walking around college, not even thinking about scholarships. So yeah, that's definitely crazy. Appreciate you breaking all of that down. So I'm curious though. So, okay, there was a situation with the two white boys that led to you going to the financial aid office. Was that the genesis of Paid for College, or where did
Great
Paid for College
question.
come in?
So Pay for College actually came years later,
Oh, wow.
after undergrad. I ended up going to get my master's at Florida International. And oh, another thing I will say is that scholarships comes in different forms. So that could be also leadership. So I was an RA in undergrad, so that paid for my whole housing, right? So like all those different things that are all scholarships are all based like working efforts. So we just have to think about scholarships in very different ways, different opportunities, where to find the money. So I'm all about finding where the money resides way before that it came a thing, right? So so anyway, I move on to my graduate school. I'm in Florida at Florida International. If anybody knows that school, it's beautiful. The campus looks like a resort, first of all. So I got to move to Florida finally, right? I didn't get to go there, but I was like, listen, I'm paying for this one, I'm going. And went and had an interview and ended up doing like graduate studies and working for higher ed. And I've always worked with students who were underprivileged or minority students, right? But I think my concept of minority was always a racial one until I got to Florida International, right? And there it taught me what really it meant to be diverse, right? So we're talking about a campus that literally about maybe 65-70% of the students were international students. I had no concept of. The question wasn't where are you from? It was like, what are you? That was the first question. It wasn't where are you from? It was what are you? Like, are you from Costa Rica? Are you from what part of Africa? Are you West Indian? Like, that was the first question that you asked them. So I was like, I'm African American. And they're like, and like, they never just saw somebody who's just black, right? And so I'm like, no, I'm just black. And they're like, really? Like, I'm like, yes. It was so interesting because I got to see so many cultures of the experience, but I also got to hear Hispanic serving. It's also a Hispanic serving institution. So really seeing that entire Latin community and understanding like what their struggles are, because their parents don't speak English, many of them. And so they have another layer of trying to understand or try to get their parents to understand paying for school, right? So understanding that, learn Spanish there. And from there, I was helping students understand how to pay for school, what I did, share my story a little bit more. And that's when I realized I was an anomaly. I didn't realize that before. I just assumed I graduated undergrad early, by the way. I graduated in 3 years instead of four. And so, yeah.
You ain't realize that
No,
was different.
I was just working, man. I was like, I'm paying for all this. I'm taking classes during the summer. I'm taking classes winter break because I'm like, listen, I'm finding the money. I'm getting out of here, right? And I knew graduating early was special, but I didn't realize the graduating with no debt.
Oh yeah,
Yeah, because
that's a different
nobody
ball game.
really talked about how much debt they had on campus. It's not a conversation, right? And it should be. So I think we could help each other. But anyway, get to undergrad, I'm sharing. I mean, get to grad school and I'm sharing. And people are like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And so that's when I started like helping students one on one. Got to Boston, the economy crashed in Florida, so I had to leave Miami, go to Boston, and I'm there working at Boston College, and I'm working with first generation students in the same thing. And these are parents who could pay, right? And some of them couldn't pay. And they were just like, nobody's ever talked mm-hmm. about any of this. And that's when Paid for College was born. So I started really wow. just helping one-on-one people, and I started to realize like, oh, this is a bigger thing. There's way more people who do not know this. But it wasn't until I started working at UNCF that I really was like, oh, no, this is a big scale. Nobody knows. Right. And so when I got, that was the biggest blessing for me to like go to HBCUs all across the country, talk to students, and they're really first generation. They're really like, no, they are the biggest chance for their family, right, to change the entire trajectory. And talking to them and sharing like what I knew, and for them to see that I look like them was also a big part, right? Because people at this point, all your financial mm-hmm. gurus are all white. The what's his name, Dave, all of them, they're all white. You don't see Black mm-hmm. people talking about finances. You don't see them talking about being debt free. You don't see them. You just don't, right? And I always had an issue with that. And I was like, you know, I want to be the Black Dave Ramsey for real, but in a college. And after that, I said, yeah, I'm going to really push hard for this. And I started working with schools and counselors and talking to financial aid officers. And they were like, yes, please get this information out. All the financial aid advisors, they know. And they do these programs on campus. But for some reason, how they explain it in their communication isn't coming out clear. And I am a great communicator, I think. I think that I'm able to adjust and to really break some things down instead of having the terminology that really stops a lot of our students. Because a lot of this terminology isn't something we had in high school. Once you got to college, you're like, what? What are all these terms? Mm-hmm. Like, what? Like, you have to figure out a whole nother language. And so that's the other piece to being a first gen, or even if you're not a first gen and your parents went to school years ago, it's different. It's just different. So technically everybody's first gen at this point, and you just all over. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for Pay for College now more than ever to give the college financial literacy. And that's why I always talk about it as college financial literacy and not just scholarships. But my highlight is scholarship. I want you to avoid debt. But in the great scheme of things, I want you to manage college finances as a whole. You need to know all the intricate pieces of it. You need to know what each term means. You need to know all of it in order to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, that's definitely amazing. So specifically about your journey, how much did you pay off and in what time?
Great question. So my state degree from Eastern Connecticut was about, all 4 years, probably around 80K. Now the college, the scholarship part was probably half of that, only because the first year I had to learn, you know, and then after that, kind of, going in that way. So total, it would have been 80. I graduated early, so that cut down everything. And I always tell people to really think about it. Your winter classes and everything, you're paying less than you would for a whole semester in a short amount of time. You're learning the same thing. Mm. So it's easier to see if you have winter course classes, or because you're not doing anything any, like, for real. Like, what are we doing? We're going to sit home and just look at the walls and talk to our parents? I mean, you can still do that and take a course that's literally a third of the cost it would be for a whole semester in 8 weeks. Yeah, I'm taking it, or 2 weeks, right? And your intercession. So I'm like, yeah, I'm taking it and I'm going to pass it and then I can move on. Instead of having to take an entire year to take a class that I could have taken 2 weeks. It's crazy. It's intensive, but it's way worth it, right? And so that was that. So for grad school, however, because that one I didn't have to pay for because I did my graduate assistantship, which a lot of people don't talk about. Graduate assistantships is a whole thing that nobody speaks about. For grad school, came from grad school. And then outside of the graduate assistantship, all the scholarships I got, only 30% of people actually apply to a graduate scholarship. And that's crazy because there's so many.
Can you repeat that? Okay, we're not going. We got to repeat that for
It's
people listening.
30%, only 30% of the scholarships that are offered for graduate students get applied to. 30.
That's crazy. So we winning
Basically,
in
if you're
graduate
applying, you're
scholarships.
most likely getting it because nobody's out here talking, nobody's doing the research, and it's so crazy because grad school, that's all we're doing is research. So you would think like it'd be easier for us to find, right? You could think that is
That's
like,
a
okay,
fact. That's a fact.
you're just teaching us research for a paper? Are we teaching research for our financial futures? There's two different things, right? So when I tell people and they're like, oh, I can't find it, I'm like, okay. So I think I'm about to also do another class on just how to search for scholarships on Google. Because some people tell me how they search for scholarships on Google, I'm just like, okay, now I see why you're confused, right? Because if you're not in the STEM or computer science, and again, I wanted to be an engineer, so I know more than a regular person, not a normal, a regular person might know. But Google's a search engine. You know this. It's a search engine. So what you put in it is what's going to pop up, right? But on top of that, so people are like, yeah, that's simple. I just put it in. But no. You have to think about all the SEO components of it. You got to think about all of the paid advertisement. How many people pay just to be on the first page? Some people said, wait, there's more than one page on Google search. I'm like, what? And that's
It's
because we
crazy.
have not really studied Google. We have not fully understand how to use Google to its maximum potential, right? And there are things that you could do to really maximize how to search. So grad school in itself, probably 120,000 worth for all 2 years, excuse me, because I'm counting my next 2 years of Boston College, right? So Boston College, expensive in itself. And that was the business school, right? So you're talking about pretty much like an MBA in a sense. So it's a whole nother section to it. So overall, I would say scholarships wise, total, and this is funny because I've never totaled this up. So I'm like thinking, I'm like, oh, probably
We
don't
got
know.
to get the
I'm like,
details
hey,
on the
I'm
spot.
counting like, yes, you're probably looking around like 300, 325K, of education that I did not have to pay full price for. I probably maybe paid a third of that, maybe 30. Yeah, for all three. Yeah, pretty much 30 for all three. So I think it's important to know that the resources are out there. And when somebody challenges, I love a good challenge. If somebody said, I couldn't find it for this, I can't find anything. And then I'm like, okay, hold on. And it takes me like an hour. And I'm like, here. And they're just like, what? I like the challenge, right? That's another reason why I started to pay for college. I like the challenge of searching. So I didn't want to assume that I was just a lucky person, right? I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm just lucky. I probably found the right scholarship. I found the right time. And I'm like, it can't be. Like, it can't be. I know I wasn't that lucky. I didn't have a 4.0. I wasn't an athlete. I didn't have all the stuff you would think that I would have. I was a good student, but I was not in the high GPA areas. Like I wasn't. So, that assumption that I gotta have a high GPA was also out the window because I realized that most of the scholarships didn't even ask me my GPA. Right? They asked me about my community service and my leadership more than anything. They asked me what I wanted to study and why, but they weren't really coming at me with, did you have a 3.0, 3.5 and above? They weren't asking me that. So those are the things I always tell students, like your GPA isn't really the issue, right? But about you finding the right opportunities that are in alignment with what you want to do and that you're in alignment with the organization. Because every organization, and I say this because here's the thing, I'm going to say this to your viewers. The reason why I say I push so hard for scholarship, because it is going to be one, if not the most important way to pay for school for the next decade. No question. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is, guess what? These scholarships that are being offered, the money that's being offered, can be a tax write-off. Hear me clearly. Hear me clearly.
Hold on. Hold on.
Hear me clearly. There is a reason why there's artists like Beyonce and Jay-Z coming out with scholarships. There's a reason why Gates Millennial Scholarship did a scholarship. There's a reason why foundations are offering scholarships. There are a reason why your church is offering a scholarship. There is a reason, because you could, you know, count it off as taxes. It's a business move. Mm. So that means you're going to see more businesses offering a scholarship. This is not a game to say, oh, I don't have to do scholarships. What? No. This is where you need to be, because this is where the money is going to be. It's no longer going to be coming from your school. It's going to be coming from small organizations, nonprofits, large ones. Coca-Cola does one every. There's a reason. So when I found that out, I was like, this is the new wave. If you don't understand how business works and taxes work, then you're missing out. Like, this is, you know, any small business is probably going to be offering a scholarship. Mm-hmm. So important for your viewers. No, this is not something to just skimmy over. No. Scholarship is where you need to be.
Definitely. Make sure y'all re-listen to the episode as many times as you possibly can, just so it's ingrained in your subconscious mind. So we're not gonna go past how much you got funding and scholarships. So you got about $300,000in funding through scholarships. That's crazy. Do you happen to know the number of scholarships? Like, was it 10 different scholarships? Was it like
100? Great question. So definitely 100. Definitely 100 plus for each degree. Mm-hmm. Because my thing is, all money adds up. And a lot of people focus so much on, like, I need 5,000. So they're only going to apply to $5,000 scholarships, or, you know, the higher big name scholarships, but you're forgetting about your $750, $1,500. That's your books, that's your, like, that's your fees. That's all that adds up. So I was applying everything. And guess what? Yep. You're also less competitive when you go for the smaller ones, because everybody's overlooking it. So they're like, what am I going to do with $850? A lot.
Exactly. Or they're not applying at all, because you don't know what you don't know. I didn't even know to be applying to any of these.
And the people that you think, if you're, and that's the other thing, if you think you're not eligible, you're like, oh, I don't have enough good GPA, or I know other people that would probably get it. Guess what? They're not applying. I can't tell you how many students I spoke to in school, student leaders, by the way, who are valedictorians, who are 4.0s, 3.8, and they're not applying to anything, and they got debt. So I say to student leaders, what's in it for you? So you're walking around campus in the courtyard at the, you know, and you're literally just saying, oh, I'm the queen of this, I'm king of this, I'm court of this, all this stuff, and you got debt? That doesn't make sense. Like, you, if anybody on this campus shouldn't have debt, it should be you. There's no reason why I would have an institution scowling me around, putting me in their newsletters and all this stuff, and I got money that I owe. What? No, absolutely not. So I tell students, you need to be talking to your financial aid advisor. The reason why I also got so much money is that I had a relationship with my advisor. And that's the part that students always overlook, is that you need to, it's not just, oh, they helped me, they understood, and they told me I filled out my FAFSA. Okay, great, but are you keeping up? Like, that advisor I went back to after that encounter with the two white boys, I follow up with her every semester. Mm-hmm. And when she was walking around campus, I was like, hi, Ms. Jones, Tanika Mangum, happy to see you, are you doing well? Hey, do you know what scholarships that are out. Every time I saw her, cafeteria, lunchroom, walking to class, when I saw her, "Hey, Miss Jones, Tanika Mangum," and everybody's like, "Why do you say your whole name?" So she did it. Because guess what? There were scholarships that I won that I didn't even have to apply to. Why? Because she knew my full name. But you gotta be strategic, like you're marketing,
That's a
right?
hat.
So there were some scholarships that she was like, "Hey," because guess what? They get scholarships sent to them, by the way, saying, "Do you know any student who would be eligible?" They're not gonna go through her system and pull out a whole list and try to figure it out. They're gonna think who comes to mind first. Guess what? Tanika Mangum. Right, so I
That's a
don't think
fact.
you wait until people send you emails
That's a
or
fact.
things to be sent out to you. What? No, it's about relationship building. People cannot help you if they don't know that you need. So if you're walking around like you don't need anything and you're not being saying, "Hey, I need to figure out how I'm going to come up with this such money," and you're not talking to your professors, they all get scholarships in their email. I'm telling you this, I know it for the fact. They all get scholarships sent to their email addresses. They get set scholarships sent to the school saying, "Hey, this is a scholarship that we have. If you know anybody interested, please share." And you talking about you don't, nobody sent you anything? The whole campus has information.
Man. Information. You said a lot of great stuff. I think we've got to acknowledge the fact that when we talk about hundreds of scholarships, like you were remaining disciplined going after the ones that were less than $1,500. Some people might just have the mindset, I want to go after the $5,000 one. You were consistent, building the relationship with your people. And you just applied the effort that was supposed to be applied. And these are common themes that I'm always telling my listeners. So I think it's dope that you displayed it without even mentioning discipline, consistency, and effort. So I think it becomes this thing that all people that achieve any financial success or any success in general, to have these elements of this discipline, this consistency, this effort, the way that you had a strategy to be mentioning, Tanika Mangum. I wanted us to dive into any resources you could give us off the top or just a mindset of applying, because some people might be like, I'm gonna go to Google, I'm gonna search, I'm not gonna find anything. So what can you give us in terms of how
Sure.
to
So,
approach tackling these scholarships?
one of the things that you said about mindset, that was really the biggest thing for me. I had to envision myself debt-free before it happened, right? So people ask me all the time, like, how did you know this could be an attainable goal? I didn't. I didn't know it could be an attainable goal, but I was going to sure try, right? Like, what did I have to lose? I was already first gen. I was already going to be like, either I tried or I just accepted 30 years of debt. For me, that was a no-brainer. It was like, no, I'm going to try. I'm going to come out here. I'm going to try. And the thing about it is, not only am I going to try, I'm also going to ask for help. I'm also going to reach out for my resources. I'm also going to let people know this is what I'm trying to do. People are motivated when they feel like they can be a part of your journey. Think about it. Influencers we have on Instagram, they're like,
That's a
"Help me get
fact.
to this, help me get to this." And we're over there clicking on it, voting for them on pages and stuff like that. Because why? We want to be a part of their journey. They're no more special than you are. So why aren't you sharing, "Hey, I'm
Truth.
gonna pursue this degree," or "I'm thinking about going to school. If you know anybody who has a scholarship, or if you want to support me, here's how you can support me." Why don't we have that? Your journey is just as important as an Ivy Park. Let's be real. Let's be real, right? Like, you got people sharing Ivy Park, ain't never met her. Ain't never, like, probably not ever gonna meet her, right? And she had people who sent, and you think, like, "Oh, Beyonce sent me a letter." No, that was her, one of her assistants or her team members, like the marketing, right? It's the same thing. The marketing is free.
Hey,
No,
don't have the Beehive come after my podcast.
I'm a Beyonce fan too, but
I'm just
my
playing.
whole thing is this. It's just marketing, y'all. She not doing
That's a
nothing
fact.
more different than what you could do. She got the same tools, same resources as us, got the same phones, the same TikToks, the same Instagram, the same Facebook. Yes, you might have more followers, obviously.
For real.
But I'm saying, like, your community or the people that you could connect to is way more, you have way more access to people than our parents did. You have way more access to money than anybody else, you know, around us has. So my whole thing is just try. Just put yourself out there to say, this is what I'm trying to do. Your support would be, you know, important, right? Because people want to support you. But if they don't know how to support you, how can they?
Mm-hmm.
So just be open about that. Put that Cash App on your Instagram. Make posts about you studying or you why you want to do these things, right? Those are all, it's all marketing. It's all stuff that we can do. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. Mindset, envisioning yourself before it happens. It won't be attainable if you don't try. It won't. You know, you just have to at least try.
That's true.
And you'll be surprised when you start and you start winning. And then, hey, you can be on a podcast too, right? You can be on this podcast talking about, hey, I turned into that one and she was right and I tried it and here I am, right? So, you know, all the stuff that we're saying, right?
Sorry.
The other part to this, when it talks about resources is go to the uncommon places, right? So I always tell people this, as an exercise, if you really don't know where to start, Google's getting on your nerves. You talk to your professors, you talk to your financial aid. Guess what? When I talked about those foundations or businesses that have scholarships, and you probably wonder, what scholarships are that? This is what I tell people as an exercise. Wake up one day, and from the beginning of that day to the end of that day, I want you to write down every single brand that you encounter. I'm talking about your mattress, your toothpaste, your floss, the water bill, the TV company, your Brita and your thing, your lights, your wallpaper, your microwave brand, the shoes that you use, the windows that you use, the hoodie that you put on. What brands are you supporting already? And then go after that full day, the next day, go onto Google and type that brand in and the word scholarship. Just see. Just see if they got something for you. Because if you're supporting them, they could also be supporting you and you don't even know it. So starting there, that's just a simple exercise where you be surprised, one, how many brands you use.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, also like how many brands actually will be able to support you back, right? So that's one exercise. The second exercise I would offer to your viewers or your listeners is to really talk about your foundations, your local businesses, right? So if I want to study physical science or I want to be a physical trainer or something, right? I could go on Google. I can type in exercise science offices near me or businesses near me, right? Because Google is wonderful. It gives you everything near you, right? With a radius. And of all those businesses, I could go on their websites and see if they offer any type of grant or scholarship. If it's not listed, when you say like, oh, they do a lot of work. They do a lot of things. I wonder, like, I would really like to be connected to this place. I would call and ask. Sometimes their websites aren't as intuitive or like user-friendly, and they could have an opportunity to say, oh yeah, we actually offer one through our foundation. This is the website. Or, oh yeah, we offer this opportunity from this office, but it's just not on their site. So that's another way to get local support from businesses and based on your major or based on what you want to study. So those are the two that I'm just going to leave with your listeners. I can't give all the gems, but those are two big ones that I think like people absolutely skip over all the time. And I'm just like, you know, the research doesn't have to be hard. You don't have to go through index or, you know, get a book or anything. This is just using the internet to its maximum capacity.
Okay, that's amazing. And how long has Pay for College
So I officially made it a business. Before, I was called Tanika Mangum Education Consulting. It was way too long. And I was also doing career. So I was actually helping people with their resumes as well. And I had a number of clients get promotions. Like I'm talking about from government employees all the way to internships. And I did that for a while. People still ask me today if I will I'm still getting referrals today. But I really wanted to focus on the college piece and the paying. So that's when I switched it over and I made it to Pay for College. So it's been officially Pay for College since 2016. Yeah, we're 5 years in. Yep.
No, so we're 5 years in.
And
perfect, perfect, perfect. That's a perfect transition into were you going to say something? Yeah, definitely. But so I like to make predictions. We're going to transition into before we transition into the financial round and then close out the episode. I want to know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? So you're 5 years in and Paid for College. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? You graduated debt-free, helping people find scholarships. Is it going to triple? Is it going to double? Like, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah, so for Paid for College, I see myself really taking it nationally. I want my online course to be a national one. I would love it to be a curriculum in a school. Mm-hmm. Not just one, but a couple. Mm-hmm. I would love to also have the opportunity to teach maybe a class as a credit, like in a college or a community college. I would absolutely love that. Full college literacy. So again, it's not something that's taught, and I think it's very important. So that, I see 2 books, and I also see a planner section. I actually do have a planner. One of the things about scholarships that people fear or have trouble with is staying organized with them. And there's not a planner that was out. And so I created one. I created a planner called Scholarships in 90 Days. So it's a 3-month calendar. But outside of that also has like tips and strategies on how to stay organized for your scholarships. So it's a full on like my system and what I did for the planner, but I want to make it more accessible and more like user friendly. So I do have that scholarship book, and I would love to see that in stores. But that might be, I don't know if it's a 5-year plan, but hopefully we'll have it in stores. I want it to be like when you go to like TJ Maxx or Marshall's, you'll see it, you know, in the section. That's all Pay for College. That's what I'm working towards. Really working with foundations now. I've got a couple foundation commitments that I'm solidifying right now. So working my way to get into school districts, get into some curriculum or a teaching in a community college or a college for a credit. That's the goal. And then long term, or personally, 5 years, I'm kind of like a nomad. I don't really have to like live in one distinct place. So I actually want to do conferences. I want to do a full on, like, obviously when COVID's gone, prayerfully, I want to do a full on conference, like a Pay for College conference, which will feature all these tips and strategies on paying for school in different ways, right? So there are so many strategies how to maximize or how to maximize your debt. Like I said, I mentioned that story before, how they were using scholarships, and some even use loans to buy real estate in college. A whole nother thing. So there's so many different pieces to paying for school, right? And how to maximize or manage your financial college finances. So I want to have a conference on that. That's for parents and students, but geared to more like first years. And I want that traveling. I want to be a traveling conference. Right. So we do New York, San Diego, like we were just doing this conference and have it sponsored, obviously, and all that stuff. But that's the that's the big vision, like to really get, the story out and really helping people understand what works best for them. But I also would love to have offices. I wanna duplicate myself multiple times over. So what I want is to offer a certification program, like a pay for college certification on college financial literacy. That does not exist right now. So I want it to be like where teachers could literally take their certification and they will be able to teach their students all college financial literacy and prepare them before graduating. But it's a certified program. So, they would get credit for it, their schools would pay for it, so it wouldn't have to come out of their pocket. But it is a like a professional certification. So that's the goal. I have so many like, but that's really, I don't know if they're all gonna be in 5 years, obviously not. But that's where I see myself and where I see college like growing to beyond just me doing one-on-one clients or doing an online course. I see this being so much bigger. I get a lot of ask for international students too. So another like piece that I'm thinking about how to approach paying for school in the US, right? Because it's just different.
Oh,
They're
yeah.
not used to these, like, all these things. So, and I think because of my background at Florida International, I have a really good understanding of what they have to go through. So it just gives me another opportunity to do that. But yeah, so that's it's gonna be a busy next 5 years. But for me, it's like the last 5 years was good. I helped a lot of people. I have a couple of clients who are debt free information that I've given them. I have students who are at some of the top schools that aren't paying, don't have loans right now because they were my client. So it's
Awesome.
just, it's just me trying to amplify it now. Now that I know it worked, and it wasn't just a personal thing, like I said earlier, I wanted to make sure it wasn't just a personal thing. Now that I know 5 years in, like I got proof now, let's maximize it to the 10th.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely. Before we get into the financial round, a couple of things. So one thing you mentioned was the planner. You said you want to expand into places like TJ Maxx and stuff. Do we have the planner available now for people that might want to implement it?
No, so the planner I took off because I'm redesigning it. I have to all the stuff with like the best planners, all those planners are made, they're all made in China, which means I have to figure out a whole different, I had to learn a whole different process. So that's what I'm like working on now, the redesigning to make the planners look like the way people like them to look. And they're all made internationally.
Okay,
So
gotcha.
that's kind of the planner that I have is American based. And it does not look like that. It's more of like your like it looks like a book, like a regular like book. People loved it, and so that I mean, people were asking me this year like, "Is the new one out?" But I really wanted to take the time to develop the product the way it should be, so that I can get it out to more people and get it to more schools. So it's not available right now, but it will be for 2022.
Okay, cool. Okay, and second thing before we head into the financial round. This is recorded, it's on record. So I'm self-nominating myself as a speaker for your conference.
Listen, you don't have to even self-nominate because you have no idea how many people I have a running list of people that I'm like, I want them.
Okay.
So you're already on it. Don't worry. I
All
have
right, there we
a notebook and I write down people that I encounter that I'm like, they would be awesome, right? So
All right, perfect, perfect, perfect. Just had to solidify that real quick. All right, so heading into the financial round, it's just four quick questions. Nothing's aimed to trick you or anything, but without further ado, let's get straight to it. Number one, what do you do for fun when you're not choking out student loan debt, getting all these scholarships and stuff?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I love music. I love wine, obviously. I actually also have another business where I do intimate wine events.
Red
So,
or white?
oh, red all day. I'm a red girl.
Okay.
I'm a red girl all day. Love music. I love the arts in general. Like, so singing, dancing, writing poetry. Film, that's all me. I love it. Spoken word, all of it. I'm gonna stop there because I don't want to tell all my little secrets, my personal secrets.
Okay.
But I did record. Okay, I'll give you one. I did record an album once in my life.
Oh, dope.
So yeah, I got some hidden talents, but they're not in the forefront.
Okay. Is it like out there, or is it more of like a personal thing just under you for you?
No, I did this back in college.
Oh, okay.
I wrote all the songs too. So yeah, I was like produced and everything. We had a whole thing and we sent it out. But I tell him, do not put this out because like he always like every now and then, you know, as you get older, you connect with people on Facebook. And he's like, I still got that album. I'm like, listen, do not play that thing anywhere. But I still have the notebook that all the songs are in. So I keep like stuff like that. So, it's just interesting. Like, wow, you did do that. Like, yeah, I did do that. It's crazy.
Good. What if he hears this episode and leaks it?
Huh?
What if he hears this episode and he decides to leak
Man,
it?
I was like, wait a minute, sir. Like, we talked about this, but I feel like it's gonna come out. You know how you think about like when you die and you go to your funeral service, what people are gonna talk about? He's
Oh, yeah.
never gonna mention that. He probably will like, oh, I got the CD, the special dedicated CD, because like
That's
nobody,
crazy.
nobody's heard it, because I kept it so under wraps. But yeah, so I did spoken word. I had a whole like I was doing a poetry book. I mean, I did a whole bunch of things in my life on the art side. I was a dancer since like just the whole nine. I just love the arts in general.
Okay. So we got the exclusive confession about the album. Okay. I like that. Number two, what's your favorite money resource and why?
Ooh, gosh, my favorite money resource. Oh, there's so many. I really am passionate about really following the people that everybody hears about. So that's the, of course you got your Daves and your Susie. I haven't really tuned into Susie that much, but I try to look out for new people. Kind of like the Budgetista, right? Really, really
Oh, yeah, I know her.
love what she's doing. Congratulations to her on being the first African American on Money Magazine. That's major. So she's setting like a good play out for me, and I would love to interview her. When that's one person I would absolutely want to meet because our stories are so similar. And how we began. And so like I'm like, okay, she started there. I can keep going. I can push it, right? So kudos to her. So she would be one. Michelle Singleton is another one that's kind of like local in the DMV area, but she's got like I think like four or five books about financial journeys or challenges to help people along. Great, great, great resource. I also like learning about investments. So Melanie Hobson is one of my like man, like she's up there with Oprah for me. I just really, really love her. And if you don't know who she is, definitely look her up. But she's a beast financially. So yeah, those are the three. All of them are women. That's funny. Three black women who are in the space, but none of them have touched college financial literacy. So that's why I'm like, I think I'm in a very special area, because you don't see college literacy being black, right? It's usually like white people who have been talking about it or started talking about it, but they're not in the space of what I'm trying to do. So I hope to fill it.
Yeah, representation is very, very key. So, yeah, definitely. Number three. What habit can you attribute to your success for being debt free? We're talking about hundreds of scholarships you applied for. So discipline is obviously there, but what would you say?
I would say that I felt like I was worth it.
So the mindset, going back to it.
Yeah, mindset. I felt like I was worth it. And I'm the type of person that if I feel that I'm worth something, I'm really gonna fight for it. I'm a fighter. That people say like Tanika is one of the hardest working people. I am stubborn in that way, where if like I fully believe in something, I'm gonna fight for it. I'm gonna keep like going for it. So definitely mindset, effort. But I'm really good at research. I'm just a nerd in that way. Like I love figuring out how things work, which is probably why I wanted to study engineering. I just love figuring out how things work. Like I don't want to just see like the product. I want to know like how did you make that product? Like what did you do to get there?
Yeah, I feel that.
I'm the processor. I'm very big in process. So every little thing, I'm always thinking about how to make the process better, how to make it more effective, how to make it more clear for everybody. So I think that's helped me a lot. That's helped me the biggest in business, is that I'm able to see something and say like, this could have been easier. This could have been more clearer, and let me do that. And that's helped me for scholarships because again, my financial advisor just told me about scholarship, but she didn't tell me how. She didn't tell me like the four ways to start an essay. She didn't tell, like none of this stuff was there, you know? I had to literally go out and research and put it all together. And now that I have it all together and I'm sharing it with everybody and it's working, I'm like, okay, we're going to go with it.
Yep. Those of y'all listening, y'all got the cheat code, so run with it. For sure. All right. Number four, probably the most important question. If you could change one thing about the Black community, what would it be and why?
I can change one thing about the Black community. Oh man, that's a good one. The one thing that I would change about the Black community is I would love for us to, and we already do this in a number of ways, but I want us to teach our kids to do it better. And I think it's about, we as a Black community, we are always the type of people who will take scraps or take like little to nothing and make it good. We always credit ourselves for that. Like, hey, we started from here and we made this, right? Or we, right? And I want us to celebrate those wins a little bit more, but I want us to really work on helping our kids or our students find their voice. I think that's the thing that I see the most that's hurting us, are the next generation. This next generation doesn't really have a vocal voice. They have a visual voice, but it's not vocal. And what I mean by that is they won't ask you questions, right? So if you're doing a session, they won't ask you any questions. They'll just look at you. They'll have a whole bunch of questions in their head. You can see it. You can see it in their eyes. They got questions, right?
Yeah.
And they won't ask. They won't raise their hands. They're more of like afraid of what other people might say. They're afraid of how that might be perceived, even if everyone's the same question, right? And in that, they also won't ask questions that are very important, right? So, and it's because in the Black community, a lot of us have grown up in a household where it wasn't welcome to ask questions. You don't ask to your parents. You don't ask authority things, right? And I want us to change that a bit because it's actually hurting us. We're developing a community who doesn't ask questions, or we're waiting for other people to ask the question for us. And they are inquisitive in their mind, so they'll go on Google and they'll say, I'll figure it out. But as we all know, search engines don't help you figure it out necessarily. Sometimes it's about asking the direct person with experience, but because we've shut their voice off so early, they don't ask. I see that most common, and that's something I really hope that we could start to do better in. Giving them the opportunity to ask the questions, the voice to say they didn't agree, or, you know, really like standing firm without it being obviously respectfully, of course, but there's something about us not being able to ask questions, or us to not have a disagreement, or to not be able to disagree with our parents, that really sets the tone for the rest of our lives in education and beyond. And I see it all the time. And if I was going to pursue a PhD, that would be the topic.
Oh, wow.
And how your voice literally does create that. And even when the things that we've seen in the last couple of years with the Black Lives Matter movement, we've seen like how students have responded when they got dealt with, when they got confronted or have been in an unfortunate situation, right? Mm-hmm. All their like reactions are like shock. They don't know what to say. They don't know how to defend themselves. They don't know what to do. And a lot of it is just like rage or visual representation, right? So it's like, okay, we go out to protest, we go out those things, but how do you then change all of that to be a movement, to really move it forward? Mm-hmm. Our generation and older knows how to put a movement together, right? Like, know how to make movements, but I don't know if the next generation necessarily knows how to do that. And they do it in different ways. Obviously, they've done the movement about the guns, right? But I forgot what it was called. Like, oh, I forgot the name of it. I have a whole T-shirt, and I forgot that it's Black Matter. March Against Guns or something like that. But I just feel like I want our Black community to be able to let our students develop their own voice without it being a negative aspect, right? I just see as we shut down quicker than other students do.
That's definitely huge. And then that kind of reminds me of the fact that we're always talking about generational wealth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first thing that pops into people's heads is finances. But I think we should look at generational wealth in terms of getting rid of these generational, emotional trauma mm-hmm. stuff to where that we could actually, you know, communicate with each other. So I think I think what you said is definitely huge. So final question, can you give us a final financial nugget to bite on?
The final financial nugget. Okay, the final financial, if you're looking for scholarships, here's a major tip for a trend is you should always apply or look for scholarships and apply 3 months prior to the next start of the semester. The most volume of availability of scholarships is always going to be 3 months prior to the start of the next semester. So if you're fall and you're starting school in September, August, end of October, September, 3 months prior to that would be your June, July, will be your May, June, right? So that time frame is when you really should be applying for scholarships. Now that's interesting because a lot of students have already graduated or they're just doing their senior prom stuff. They're not even looking at scholarships, right? But nobody was looking at scholarships. But it's their last dollar scholarship. And there's a lot of money that's still available in the summer. And so when people go into school and they're like, oh, I still need this. And I'm like, oh, did you look for scholarship last 3 months? Right. So in knowing that's not, it has to be an everyday thing. It's a strategy. Again, it's a strategy. I always tell my students, you really need a minimum of 2 hours a week. And that 2 hours can be 30 minute breakdowns. It'd be 15 minute hour, like, breakdowns could be an hour here, hour there. But you really just need a minimum of 2 hours to search and apply a week. The first hour would just be the searching. You're not doing nothing else but searching. And we do that regularly. Mm-hmm. Right? You search for something in an hour be done. Right? And that second hour is you literally you setting up to apply. So that is, what do I need to apply? Maybe you have everything already and now you're applying, but that's that second hour. So it doesn't have to be gruesome. I think when you talk about researching for scholarships, people think I got to spend all these hours in a day or all, it's like, no, you just have to up
Yeah.
and be strategic about your time, what you're doing, right? So if you're going in and you're thinking, oh, I got to search for everything and I got to apply for all of them at the same time, then yeah, you're going to be overwhelmed. This is about making your process easy, right? So just break it up in pieces. I'm just searching, not doing nothing else. I'm searching. Everything that I find that's eligible, put it in a chat. I put the link there. I'll come back to all the details later, right? I'm not even putting a detail. I just know I'm eligible. Put the name, put the link, come back to it. Just for the first hour. That's it. You'll be surprised how more focused you can be and how more like in tune you can be because you know exactly what you're doing, right? It's not, I got to look for everything. Like, no, I'm eligible next. Right, it just moving.
Yep.
So those are the I gave you two for that. Those would be the two.
I will take it. We'll definitely take it, man. Appreciate you, Tanika. Thank you so much for your time. I know people are gonna get extreme value, and I hope that turns into extreme execution. How can we get in contact with you?
Yeah, you can contact at www.paid4college.com. All social media, Facebook and Instagram is paid4college.com. You go to my website. I offer everything from, again, your one-on-one private coaching, group coaching, workshops. If you're a teacher or something, you want to do a workshop, can do that. If you are looking for scholarship review, if you just want to do essay review, I even do just your essay review. So I can do everything that you need. Online course, again, is coming out March 2021. Look forward to that. Mm-hmm. But you can also email me at help@paid4college.com. help@paid4college.com.
Awesome. Listen, if people listening, if you got, you know, young cousins or anything that are in high school, make sure you pass this episode to them. Get them in contact with Tanika. She'll get them right. Don't be selfish with the information. With that being said, thank you, Tanika. Y'all have a blessed one. Thanks for listening to the Debt Free Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the episode and got something new that you can apply to be closer to being debt free. If you enjoyed the episode, why don't you leave us a review, share it with a friend, and you can follow us on Instagram at Debt Free Podcast. Hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you're closer to being debt free after each and every episode. Talk to you soon.